It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 473 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, it's another great Kickstarter doubleheader show, and it starts off with Mike Kennedy from Magnetic Press, one of my new favorite comics producers. Mike talks about Wallach, the book that caught my attention and got me to talk with him, and then we get into the other offerings that Magnetic Press offers. And that includes the Kickstarter going on right now for Monolith, which is described as Black Mirror meets Breakdown in this lushly illustrated survival tale. The Kickstarter will conclude on March 5 at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and it is truly worthy of your support. A word of warning, I had some technical difficulties recording this interview, so if you need to turn up your volume for this portion of the show, please do. Be sure not to miss what Mike has to say. Then everything concludes with the return of Caleb Toussaint, who is crowdfunding his latest comic called Flytrap. It's described as Terminator meets Back to the Future. The 1986 remake of The Fly inspires the invention of time travel. What could possibly go wrong? This Kickstarter will end on Sunday, February 28 at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. This is just the latest of Caleb's excellent comics, and I highly recommend this terrific one-shot. So be sure to support both projects after you listen to this episode. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show.
I'm Mike Kennedy. I'm publisher for Magnetic Press, and we want to tell you a little bit about this project that we're kickstarting. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Magnetic. So we've been around for about 6 years, and we've built a small reputation for producing some high-quality art books, graphic novels, comics, even a few games. And most of our stuff is coming from an assortment of talent from around the world that may not be familiar to an American audience. We've published about 100 books so far in our 6 years, and we've collected a handful of nominations and awards, including about 19 Eisner nominations. No wins yet, but fingers crossed for this year. And that might sound big, but we're not. We're still just two people with a lot of passion and tenacity, and we're about as indie as it gets.
It's great to welcome to the podcast Mike Kennedy from Magnetic Press. You're the publisher there, Mike?
Yes. Yep. Publisher and founder. I started it out of my living room and kept it going since.
Because I played this little minute-long introduction to the company that you did before. That's a little old. At that time, you were supposedly a two-person company. Are you still a two-person company?
Yes. Actually, technically, at that point, we were one and a half people. Now we're two full people. So it's three individuals, but two of them are still on a part-time. So yeah, okay. We're still very independent, but every year we're growing a little bit, and 2021 looks like it might finally be the year that we break.
Well, people always get mad at me because I don't say this soon enough, but your website is magnetic-press.com.
Yes.
Yeah, I highly recommend people go there because you have great little video trailers. You have all kinds of amazing books. It's just amazing stuff. As I was telling you before we started to record, I came across – how did you pronounce that? Wacomo?
Yeah, that's how I've been pronouncing it.
Okay, because I saw that on Kickstarter. I supported it, and then I got – stuff from emails from you guys, and that's where I got the email about this great little book called Wallach the Great Journey, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah,
I was so stunned when I saw it, and luckily the email made it available to me to go and read. It's like what 130 some pages.
Yeah, I think it's 128. Yeah.
And so I started to read it, and I couldn't put it down. It was just an amazing read. I love stuff that is, you know, look, I'm a superhero guy. Batman's my guy. I love those kinds of comics. I buy every week. I go and pick up my superhero books, but I like other stories too.
Yeah.
And your books, I've been looking through your website. It's one of the reasons I mentioned it so fast, man, I have got to put some money together so I can buy some of these amazing things. Like that Wallach, I've got to have that, because when I sat there reading this, it's one of those great reads where you lose where you are. Mm-hmm. I was suddenly in, is it the North or the South Pole where this takes place?
I think it's supposed to be the North. I think it's okay. Like the Arctic Circle.
Because I started feeling cold when I was reading this book.
Yeah.
You're up there. You see all the polar bears. That's the story is about the two polar bears. And in fact, why don't I go ahead and read the description? I'll read the Comixology description. It says, Wallach and Eskimo, who is a bear. I thought that was an interesting, the name of Bear Eskimo. I thought that was really interesting. Set off on a swim between ice floes in search of food, only to find another family of bears doing the same thing. Grumpy old Eskimo isn't much of a babysitter to the little cubs, but if it means a free meal, he'll take it. And that's the beginning of it. If you go out on Comixology, interestingly enough, I've got to ask about this. You know, you've got like a 120-some page book, and yet on Comixology, you can buy them in parts. There are four parts out there. The first part is now available for $1.99, and there's four out here. Is four going to be the number that you're going to be able to get on Comixology?
Yeah, basically, most of our books, we usually publish them. Most of them tend to be hardcovers, sometimes with soft covers, depending on, on the title and, the age group for the audience. But they're almost always full length, 96, 128, 144. The books themselves are always pretty long, fully contained graphic novels. And we'll break those into whatever, 4, 6, 8 single issues, which we release on Comixology. So that way we still kind of get the frequency of a single issue schedule, but we sell the collected version in print.
Okay. Because do they come in trades, or are they soft cover or are they hardcover?
Well, we usually only release one version of the book, so it really depends. We kind of break our catalog into we've recently broken our catalog into two, I guess you'd call them age groups. We've got our prime time collection, which is kind of all the more grittier kind of sci-fi adult stuff. And then we've got the daytime collection, which is for like kids and middle grade and some YA stuff. So some of the middle grade stuff and the kids stuff, it just works better as paperback. Those will sometimes be trade paperbacks.
So is Wallach a hardcover or a trade paperback?
Wallach will be a hardcover. There's something about that feels like a good storybook presentation, it like really needed. It just felt like it's the kind of thing that could live on a shelf a lot longer than hardcover.
Yeah, I want a hardcover for that. Yeah. So I'm going to have to order that when the time comes. I mean, you guys made a digital version available to me so I could read the story, mm-hmm. so I could get into it. And I loved, like I said, I was just transported. I was somewhere else entirely when I was reading it. And it was so well done. I mean, talk about the creators, if you would, a little bit about it. Because one of the things I'm interested in, and one of the things I mentioned I was going to try to ask about, how did you guys decide to pick up this book? I'm also kind of interested in how the creators decided to tell this story. Those kinds of things interest me.
Yeah, honestly, so I haven't met the authors. So usually with Magnetic, most of our books tend to be acquisitions, usually from foreign talents. So I'll go over to like the Angoulême Festival or, one of those shows once a year. Didn't go this year because of the pandemic, but usually I'll go over and I'll just have meetings with all kinds of publishers and they'll show me what they've got in their slate and books that are coming up. And since we are so small, we can't publish that many books. So I'll usually if something jumps off the shelf, it just, just grabs me from a distance. That's usually the kind of thing that makes it on my wish list as I come back. So this was one of those books. Actually, it's funny. Wacomo and Wallach were both originally published by the same publisher in Spain, this company called Astiberi. And I saw them both, and they were both sitting right next to each other. And I can't decide which one I wanted to flip through first because they both looked so amazing. Like, just Wacomo was just this big, sprawling, digitally painted, you know, Lord of the Rings style fantasy. But then right next to it on their shelf was this just adorable, beautiful book about polar bears just getting by, you know. It's almost like a sitcom starring polar bears. And it's just so adorably drawn that, yeah, your heart just goes out to these characters. And you know, when you read it, it's just so endearing. Like, they've got personalities. Their personalities are so unique, and their agendas are clear. And yet they're also dealing with this world that us humans are affecting.
Yeah, the thing that interests me, one of the things right off the beginning, is Wallach, the younger bear, he is dealing with he feels like he's been deserted in his life.
Yeah. So full disclosure, cards on the table. This is actually – so our book is technically the second and third book in the original Wallach series. The first book was actually – published in English, I want to say like 6, 7, or 8 years ago by another publisher. And I'm ashamed that I don't know who it is because it's out of print. So our book takes place after that first story. And the first story does explain how Wallach was just unfortunately abandoned because of just global warming and circumstances. And that's when Wallach and Eskimo first meet. That said, our book is completely self-contained, and you really don't need to know that backstory. But we are talking to the publisher now to see if there's a way that we can bring that perhaps digitally or something, so that people who are interested in the backstory will have that.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that that was available. There was more story in that. I know that, I want to know more about that.
Well, the first book was also created a lot sooner, so that it's a little bit. It doesn't. Our book with the story that is in our chapter just has a lot more kind of a streamline and polish to it. Like, you can tell that the authors really they hit their stride with this story of Wallach and Eskimo, whereas the first one was, you know, that was them just trying something out. It's a little bit rougher in the corners, and you know, it's still beautiful and a good story. But like I said, you don't really need that to enjoy our book, but we're working on ways to bring that over so that people will have something more once they finish reading our book.
So it could be Wallach number 0.
Exactly. Yeah. Wallach, the prequel.
Yeah. I didn't know about that.
And it does sound like, like I said, I haven't met the authors, but we traded a few emails, and it does sound like the series is very popular in Europe. So they do have other stories that they're working on. I don't have any sort of timetable, but there will be more stories after this one.
Hmm. Wow. See, I'm fascinated by it. And it's so interesting how certain things hit certain people, because when I saw the email and I saw what the book was about, I immediately started to go through the email to see if I could find any, you know, any link that would let me at least take a look at it. And when I found most of the book there, I really just, I plunged straight in because I was so interested in it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a part early on where Eskimo, they're swimming for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And they find up like an ice float at some place. And of course, being younger, Wallach can get up on there, but not so Eskimo. He's struggling. And he kind of says he's going to just stay there. And of course, Wallach's reaction, I thought, was very endearing. And the artwork just does a beautiful job of portraying the story. I couldn't stop reading it. I was so fascinated by everything. The other polar bears they run into, the dogs they meet, too, fascinated me. Every time we ran into a new character, I was just like, wow, what's this going to be like?
I know. It's interesting how I think in the entire book there's maybe 5 human characters in passing. I mean, they're not even – I mean, two of the human characters do play a pivotal plot role in the second part, but yeah, there are no humans, and yet these animal characters are just as engaging as any human character, maybe more so. The artist, Anna Morales, she's just fantastic. The way that she can imbue just human expressions on these characters without making them feel cartoony. They still look like the animals that they're supposed to be. It's just really fantastic stuff.
Now, the thing I've always got to ask when I come across animal stories, and I was soured when I came across, there was a thing about geese. It was a movie. And what they did to make the story happen was they trained these geese to fly next to the like a little mini helicopter thing, and they could video them as they were flying next to them. And of course, when I found out that that wasn't really the story, that the story was actually kind of made up, I was a little disappointed, and I was like, you know, I'm not sure I trust the imagination of the person to be sort of accurate on this. So I'm just kind of curious, is the same thing about this book? Is this a result of their imagination? Is this, they can't possibly follow polar bears around and be able to do that with them. Was this a result of their research or I'm just trying to understand how they came up with the story.
Yeah. Well, I am speculating. I don't know for sure, but from my brief email exchanges with them, I don't believe that they, you know, went on any, you know, Arctic tours or anything like that. I mean, a lot of the story is kind of based on just characterized fiction based on, you know, nature documentaries and, you know, actual events and circumstances that real, not just polar bears, but other tundra wildlife go through. You know, the book does talk about how, you know, Eskimo and Wallach will, you know, sit at the side of these seal holes, just waiting for the seals to pop up for air. And, you know, that's actually, you know, how polar bears will hunt. There is a lot of actual animal behavior accurately portrayed, granted with a little bit of a, like I said, kind of a sitcom-y personality applied to the characters. But that's one of the things that, if you flip through Magnetic's catalog in general, you will notice that there is a proportionate number of wildlife books. We don't really get into, you know, too much like politics stuff. I think we've got a couple of historical middle grade series. Like we've got one based on Irina Sendelova, who saved a bunch of kids from the Warsaw Ghetto in World War II. But most of our books tend to just fun fantasy. And there are quite a number of titles in our catalog that feature wildlife. And one of our best-selling titles is a series called Love. And there are currently four books in the series. And the fifth one comes out this June. And each one of the books is a self-contained, wordless wildlife adventure where you follow the title character on an extraordinary day. But there's no words in it. There isn't even sound effects. There's no writing anywhere in these stories. And they're like 80-page stories. But they're just fascinating. Each one takes place in a different environment and focuses on a different animal. Like the first volume is Love the Tiger. And it follows a Bengal tiger on a somewhat typical but still exciting day in the life of a hungry tiger in the jungle. And it just features all of these, a whole supporting cast of other jungle animals that you would find. So it's almost like watching a Disney documentary. You know how Disney would make those nature documentaries where they follow the animal and they kind of turn it into an exciting story, like those Disney documentaries, just without the narration. And done really well for us. The book is called Love the Fox. And it follows a fox on a kind of a northern archipelago island type of environment that where a volcano erupts. And so there's all kinds of action and adventure as like bears and caribou and seals are all trying to escape from this erupting volcano. And that one did really well for us. We won a couple of awards for that one. And then the next one was Love the Lion, which was about a lion who had been ejected from its pride. So it was wandering the Serengeti looking for a new pride to rule, and it's got an absolutely heartbreaking ending. Just like Wallach, they're all illustrated and they're all trying to be faithful stories about true animal behavior, but in such a way that it's just dramatic and engrossing and you can't put it down. And they're just fantastic books.
What I really enjoy about them is they're not anthropomorphic.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
It drives me insane to see anthropomorphic animals who are walking around on their back legs. I mean, there are a couple of books, like, I don't know if you're familiar with Mouse Guard, where like a real, if a mouse could stand on its back legs, mm-hmm. that's what it would look like.
Oh yeah.
But then there's other ones where, you know, these mice are all standing up, but they've got human gloves and human.
Right.
They look like human and talk and walk and all this stuff. And I'm kind of like, I'm disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a certain line where at some point you cross over from being a wildlife story to just a cartoon, you know? And I think that's the thing about these books is, they stay on the wildlife side. They haven't crossed over into cartoony land. It's going to be kind of fun and silly, but they still feel authentic. And I think that's important.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I mean, I was just transfixed by this. And I haven't read the Wacoma one yet, but I'm looking forward to reading that. I've seen bits of it and the stuff in the Kickstarter, but I don't think I've gotten the materials yet. So I'm anxious to read that one. But this one just grabbed me. I knew I had to talk about it. Yeah. And I kind of figured that because it seemed like it was European, that it was going to be a little difficult to talk to the original author and stuff like that. And then to run into the language barrier and stuff like that. And it's a little tough to do that. So that's why I approached you guys. And I was kind of hoping I could talk with you because this just grabbed me. Like I said, I have just – it's rare that a comic just transports me somewhere. And when it's over with, all of a sudden I'm back to where I am, and I'm kind of surprised to be back where I am.
Yeah, and you want to kind of go back – even as cold as it is outside nowadays in real life, it's like you kind of go back into that cold Arctic tundra just to visit Wallach and see what Eskimo's up to. It's funny. We here in Chicago – we're like right on the lake, and it's like the last couple of days, it's frozen solid. Like with the gray air and everything, there was a wall of clouds over Lake Michigan, and Lake Michigan itself was frozen solid. And I swear, I was looking for polar bears. I was just asking my wife, where's Wallach? Mm-hmm. Where's Wallach?
Such a great book. I mean, I could not stop reading it. It was just, and then when I got to the end, I was like, shucks.
Yeah,
the end. You know, so it's one of those great books. And now let me ask you something. I mean, are these available? Can stores order them? And I mean, both comic shops and like Borders and bookstores and stuff. How do people get a hold of this book if they want to be able to buy it?
So Magnetic is distributed by Diamond Books and Diamond Comics. So theoretically, our books are available in comic shops all across North America, and theoretically in bookstores all around the world through Diamond Books. That said, I mean, it's up to the bookstores to know to carry it. So our recommendation is always, if you know that there's a book that you want, ask your local comic shop or your local bookstore to order it. And if they can't, or if they don't have a Diamond account, or if they're not familiar, then the next best thing is just go to our website, because we do have a web store where we've got everything there. So always buy it from our web store.
Now, I've got to ask, of course, because I became aware of you guys to Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And you've got a Kickstarter going on right now, in fact, because I went – when I was preparing to talk with you, I went out to Kickstarter and I found this amazing story out there, which, of course, the moment I saw it, I said, I got to support this. So I immediately got on there. But I just looked at the screen, it just went up again.
I just did too. You mentioned that and I flipped over. Yeah. How's it doing? Oh, wow. And it just went up.
It just ran up again. I mean, and now we're recording this early, of course. Mm-hmm. When did this launch? I mean, how long did it take for you guys to reach the goal?
Well, this going on now, it's for a book called Monolith. We just launched it at 10 a.m. this morning. And I mean, we've done enough Kickstarters to know to keep our goals realistic. So the goal was only $7,500, which, you know, that when we set our goals for these program, for these campaigns, it's to cover the costs of the exclusive items. So we're not just selling our books through Kickstarter. We are offering exclusive things that are only available through these campaigns. We set the goal based on the costs of those exclusives. So like in this particular case, we set a $7,500 goal, very modest, but that's what these extras cost. And I think we hit it within the hour. I think we launched it at 10 and I think we hit it within like 45 minutes. So,
wow.
Yeah. This particular book this would be the polar, no pun intended. This is the polar opposite of Wallach. Wallach is a very middle grade, family friendly, all ages animal story. Monolith is a little bit more of it's a rated R thriller sci-fi story. But the campaigns have done really well for us. I think just using Kickstarter to reach the audience directly has been it's been a fundamental shift for us, especially in this past year of, you know, a pandemic impacted market and economy. You know, we still sell our books to stores. We still do regular distribution and we still support comic book shops and independent bookstores. And we want to sell our books in stores. We miss the days of going into bookstores, but we're still at a point where, you know, people are, they're still at home and they're shopping on their laptop. And the real discerning graphic novel connoisseur, they're shopping on Kickstarter. And I think those are the people that we really appeal to. Kickstarter is very good to us so far.
Well, you know, the story is interesting. It's kind of got Knight Rider, kind of a car that is a vault of some sort. It keeps you safe while you drive along. And there's a young mother who has made bad decisions. Her son David has accident prone nature, and they go in a trek across the desert to visit her husband in Los Angeles. They end up, well, they're in this car, and it's the art looks amazing. And then the car, of course, I'm a car guy too. I'm sorry. And when I looked at it and the things that I can tell that it does, it's, wow. I mean, I'm going to confess something here that people are going to shoot me for. I normally buy digital copies of things because I honestly have very little room to store things. When I saw this thing, I had to order the hardcover right away.
Well, to that point, that's one of the things that we try to do as Magnetic, because believe me, I've got so many books in our condo, no room for anything else. And so I completely understand the whole dilemma of print these days versus digital. But that's the one thing that when Magnetic Press started in 2014, we wanted to make sure that the books themselves are worth having. Like, they are archival quality, gallery style hardcovers that, you know, you're proud to put on your shelf and you're proud to have sitting on your coffee table. They're books that are themselves artifacts from the world. So that's one of the things that Magnetic will always do, is make sure that if you're spending money to put a printed book in your house, that it earns a place in your house, that it's not just something that you're going to regret and put into the used bookstore pile, or, you know, or worse, the garbage. Like, it's something that you're going to be happy that you got the printed copy. I mean, we still do digital, you know, like you said, you've found a lot of stuff through digital. And for us, digital is a great marketing tool. It's a great way to kind of give people, it's like a good demo. So like, you could read the story. If you like the story enough, then you'll be happy to own the printed copy. And Monolith is one of those books where we want to make sure that this, it's going to be 9x12. It's going to be hardcover with like a, we've unlocked the foil logo and the ribbon bookmark. So it'll be a really nice physical hardcover book.
I have to give you, the person who built your website, credit. When I go into the store and I look at a page, a little box appears on the bottom right. And it says, hey, if you like this one, you may also like this one. And I literally have gotten the, when I started looking, I said, wait a minute, what is that? And I literally have gone through from one book to the other, and I've got this list now of about 10, 15 books that I'm going to try to buy when I get a little money together. Just when I get that money together, I'm going to order these things because it's hard for me to know where to start. I mean, there's a book called The Adventures of Basil and Mobius One.
Oh yeah,
and yeah. I'm transfixed by that one. There's four volumes. This is where my problem is going to be. There's more than one of these, and so sometimes I'm going to have to buy them. Probably by you have like bundles of stuff like that, and that may be the way I'm going to have to go with some of this stuff.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of. I mean, when I look like Infinity Eight, and then there's a book called Claw with a K.
Oh yeah,
that I'm fascinated by, and I. Gosh, there's all these ones, and I'm going like, there's like something called the Warship Jolly Roger.
Yep.
That I'm fascinated by. Now, I don't tend to get the art books, and that just happens to be me. I tend to want stories in my books.
Yep.
But when I started going through this, I went, holy smoke, look at all this stuff that just fascinates me. And you're making more. That's the thing that really scares me.
Well, so here I think what this is saying is that you and I are of a like mind, because a lot of people ask like, well, what makes a magnetic book? Like what is the curriculum for choosing, you know, what are the requirements for something to be acquired by magnetic or you know, what, how do you choose what you publish? Since the beginning, really, it's not a scientific answer. The answer is whether I like it. So far to date, really, Magnetic Press is just books that Mike likes. And so being kind of this, sole curator has its pluses and its minuses. On the plus side, it's like, if you think like I do, or if you share similar tastes than I do, then chances are you're going to like everything we put out.
That's my fear.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have this. The one thing that I'm going to place a lot of hope in is this thing called ambassador rewards.
Yep.
You join, you become a member, you sign in, you get ambassador points. And I might need those.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We started that program in, I think, 2015. So just real brief history of Magnetic as a brand. So I used to be publisher for a company called Arkea. And then Arkea got bought by Boom Studios. And at that point, it was kind of clear that they didn't want two publishers. So I set off on my own and I started Magnetic Press out of my living room. And some of the first titles that we published were books that I wanted to bring to Arkea, but it didn't work out for one reason or another. So Magnetic started, I continued to carry the torch of basically what you see now. You know, which is really high quality hardcover books and just a really great aesthetic. In 2016, Magnetic was acquired by Lionforge Comics. And at that point, then Magnetic became kind of like an imprint. And it was a really great move at the time. And, you know, Lionforge and the parent company Polarity, they're fantastic. And then in 2019, Lionforge merged with Oni Press, the other comic book company. And at that point, Polarity, our parent company, and I'm sorry if this is getting very confusing, Polarity, it decided to separate out Magnetic to become its own publisher again. So I'm looking at Magnetic now. Technically, this is Magnetic 1.0. Was before Lionforge, 2.0 was the 3 years during Lionforge, and right now we're in Magnetic 3.0, which is, this is Magnetic doing what Magnetic was doing originally, but with the full support of Polarity and with 7 years of brand identity and people following. So circling the wagons to get back to your original point with the Ambassador Club, that was one of the things that we did right before the Lion Forge acquisition. And it was fantastic. We got fans who would come on board and they would actually become, I mean, literal ambassadors, where they would become, you know, they would on their social medias, they would endorse the book and we would reward them. They'd get like, you know, ranked t-shirts every month, and they would get, you know, whatever that month's book is as part of the Ambassadors Club. We put out a monthly magazine. It was really, it was a lot of fun. And I think we built a lot of great stewardship with a lot of fans. And I'm really hoping that now, especially now that our Kickstarter's done really well, that we can reintroduce that club in 2021. The ambassador points were a part of that, where you would get points just for being a member. And I think there are a lot of other things that you'll be able to use points for when we get that unfolded this year.
Because you know what you guys remind me of, and it's really true, and I literally bought everything they did. Marvel for a while was doing an imprint called Soleil.
Yeah.
And there was like Universal War One was one, and of course I've got them right in front of me. I can pick them up, look at them. Ethoc, Spin Angels, I have all the hardcovers, Scourge of the Gods, all those books that I bought, and that's only a portion of them. Every time Marvel did that, I would buy those books because I always loved the different perspective and the different way of storytelling, and your books are very much reminiscent of that.
Well, so here's a little insider baseball with what that's all about. So all of those books, those Soleil books, were French titles that Marvel had licensed from the French publisher Soleil. We've actually published several Soleil books ourselves. So like we have a series called The Ogre Gods. Those are Soleil books. What else we've got? Soleil is partnered with a company called Delcourt. We published A Sea of Love. That's a Delcourt book. We have an art book called Vox, and that's from Soleil. So yeah, so actually the connection that you point out is very real because they're all from the same license source.
Because I literally, I couldn't wait for those to come out. Yeah. And I would take them home and immediately read them, and then I put them in my little shelf to keep. And I still have them. And I was trying to remember when these actually got printed. Because this has been a while. Let me see if I can really quickly open this up and see, tell you when. Let's see, 2008.
Eight, yeah, okay. Yep.
So I still got them for 12, 13 years. I'm still holding on to those because those are great stories.
Yeah.
And I get that same vibe from your stuff because it's all a gripping storytelling. I mean, I'm just fascinated by it. There's a book called Mecha.
Yep.
Which seems to be kind of a take on sort of the Transformer type of universe.
And actually that was originally published by Delcourt Soleil. So yeah, very similar.
And of course, the moment I go to that page, your website pops up. Hey, you might also like Nausea.
Tells right. me. By the same artist. Yeah. Well, and that artist, so that's by an artist named Bengal, who at the time that we put those out, so in 2014, I had seen those books, Nausea and Mecha, and he did another book called Luminate. Like, I wanted to publish those books at Archaea since like 2011, but for one reason or another, it just didn't work out. So when I decided to start Magnetic, those were the very first books that I acquired. I immediately got Nausea, Mecha, and Luminate licensed instantly. And at that time, Bengal was pretty popular in Europe, but he was still pretty much unknown in the US. So we published all three of those books in our first year. And almost immediately, he was doing work for Marvel and DC. He got pulled onto Supergirl, Batgirl. He was doing some Spider-Gwen. And then the next thing I know, he's working with Rick Remender on Death or Glory. And he just took off here in the States. I want to take a little credit for that, but you know, I think his talent is what brought him his notoriety. So
Well, one of the things I also like, too, is that you do a variety of ages. There's kids to middle grade to YA teens and then mature. It's so interesting. I always am fascinated because the young adults and all ages stuff, because sometimes that's the most fun stuff I read.
Yeah.
So when I saw you were doing that, I thought, that's interesting. That's risky, of course. You know, the safe bet is to go with the mature ones, the older people who buy comics. But on the other hand, you're trying to bring the future in by providing those books.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, that wasn't any strategic decision. It's not like we're like, oh, we need to start getting in some younger readers. Honestly, the catalog just grew organically, and the younger reader titles that we did bring in, we just brought them in because I just thought they were great books that just happened to be for younger readers. I mean, my taste is just, is this a good story? Does it look really interesting? Does it have a really unique visual style? Doesn't matter what the age group is for. So like, Doom Boy that's in our YA category. That's definitely for, you know, morose teens, but it just looks unlike anything else out there. We put out a book last year, right at the peak of the pandemic. So unfortunately, you know, I don't know how many people recognize it, but we put out a book called Gen Pet, which it's awesome. It looks like a Nickelodeon cartoon. I mean, it's got such a fun visual style. It's kind of like a Pokemon in Chinatown with, set in like a Blade Runner setting, and it's just super fun and it looks completely unique, unlike anything else I've seen. But you know, it's a perfect middle grade book. You know, it's for those 8 to 14 year old tweens. And, you know, I think if it looks good, if it reads well, if it's got good characters, a good story and a good concept, and it looks interesting, then it's a magnetic book.
I'm going to have to pay attention to you guys a lot more than I have been, because you guys are doing some of the really interesting stuff that is just gripping. I mean, I started to read what Monolith was about. I was transfixed. I said, the second I read it, I said, I got to get this on. Not only am I going to order this, I'm going to get a hardcover of this.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that kind of great storytelling that I want to keep.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the thing is, I think if people dive into our website and our web store, I would bet money that everybody could find something for them. You know, I think there's something for everyone in our library. We've got books that are, I mean, we've got a book that came out in December called The Adoption, and it's sci-fi, it's not fantasy, it's a story about a guy and his wife, and you know, he's retired, he's probably like in his late 60s, early 70s, they're retired, their grown kid, their grown son, just adopted a little toddler from Peru after a devastating earthquake left the kid orphaned. And so the story is just about, the book is called The Adoption, and the story is about this grandfather who thought he was kind of done being, you know, a parent. Not that he was ever a great father himself, which is part of the story. Suddenly having to become a grandfather. And it's just absolutely heartwarming at once. And then a couple pages later, it just gets dramatic as, you know, plot twists occur. And then at the end of the book, you've just got this lump in your throat because, you know, he's learning that, you know, he's got this grown son that he never really connected with. And that doesn't really fit next to Monolith. It doesn't fit next to Wallach. I mean, it's a completely realistic contemporary story, but something about it. I don't know if it's the art style. I don't know if it's the narrative style of these books, but it's definitely a magnetic book. So like, if you like these other stories, even if you don't think you'd like a contemporary story about, you know, elder characters becoming grandparents, I bet you would. I really think you would. It's like, there are books in here that would absolutely surprise you. Like, I gave a copy of it to my father and his 70s, who He doesn't read comics. He was an Air Force fighter pilot. You know, he drives his Porsche on weekends. He's, you know, a cowboy six gun competition shooter. He's not a comic book reader. And he loved that book. I think people should just take a look at our catalog, and I'm willing to bet that they'll find something they'll fall in love with.
I think you're going to be getting a lot more of my money going forward. I think I'm going to have to develop a magnetic press shelf here.
There you go.
Where these things are going to go. Because I Orphans fascinates me.
Oh, yeah.
Petite.
Yeah.
It's shockingly interesting. Petite is the story of a small person in a world of giants.
Yes.
When I saw that, I was just like, how does that function? You know, I was so, you know, intrigued. I couldn't figure how it could possibly work. And so at that point, I had to know, you know, I got to read this thing.
Yeah, that's the first book in the Ogre God series. And it's just as a series, those authors have created such a rich universe. I swear it would make an HBO series like Game of Thrones. I mean, there's so much richness to it. And there's three books available in the series now, and actually we'll be releasing the fourth and final one this fall. But yeah, that's another one of my favorites.
Goodness. Well, Mike, you've got the golden gut, as they used to say about one guy when in music, he would listen to songs and he would say, put that out.
Yeah.
Because he knew that'd be a big hit. And you've got the same thing when it comes to picking out good stories. Because, you know, I got to be honest with you, you know, the artwork generally draws people in, but it's the story that keeps you. But you're somehow the story, just hinting what the story is enough to make you go, I got to read that.
Well, it's funny. That's like when we were first starting Magnetic, and actually, so Magnetic was, it was me. And at the time I had a partner, and we were like, okay, well, what's the name of the company going to be? And we decided on Magnetic Press because it was stories that are visually attractive. So you're attracted to them immediately, but then they stick with you. Like once you've read it, like it's stuck to you. And so like the magnetic aspect just kind of seemed to work. It's attractive and then it sticks to you.
Wow. That's just amazing stuff. All I can tell you is, Mike, I'm going to be buying a lot more of your stuff moving forward, and I'm going to pay attention to Kickstarter too. I'm trying to figure out how I can save your Kickstarter thing so that every time one of these starts up, I can know that it's coming.
Oh, if you've backed any of them, you're on our mailing list.
Okay. Well, that'll be good.
Kickstarter is great for building up a mailing list.
I mean, I looked at Monolith and I was like stunned. I looked at how much the goal was. I looked what the amount was when I looked at it. And I was like, wait a second. I said, when did this start? And I went looking around to try to figure when it started. And I said, this has only been up for a few hours when I looked at it. And I said, holy smoke. I said, you know, that's good news. I mean, I was just shocked.
Well, we've done, I think this is our ninth campaign, it's my ninth campaign. Cause I've been doing them going back to actually our very, very first book that Magnetic published. It's a book called Super Ego. That was our very first Kickstarter back in 2013. So we've been doing Kickstarters for a while. Each time we learn a little bit, and each time our audience gets a little bit broader, and with the different kinds of books we put out, each time we put out a different kind of book, we get a little bit of a broader audience. So, you know, it's been 7-8 years in the making, but
just went up again. I was just looking at it and the total just went up again. Gee.
Did we hit 20K yet?
Not yet. You're almost there. Let me tell you,
looking at the milestones.
And almost 400 backers too. I mean,
yeah.
Good heavens. I mean, do you know how people like a fraction of that?
Oh, you there know, we go.
Did you hit it?
Just hit 20. Yes.
Oh, there you go. Yep, you're right. Yeah. Gosh, we ought to talk longer, I suppose. That'll keep things right, going.
Exactly. The thing is, honestly, the best part about this is just reaching new people, because even if we've gotten to the point where a lot of people have learned that, you know, all of our books are probably pretty cool. So we do get a lot of people following us from one campaign to the next. But surprisingly, that's not the majority. Like, that's maybe 20 or 30% of each campaign. So that means that with every campaign, we're adding another 60% of new people who've never seen Magnetic before. And that's the important part, is just trying to get the brand seen by people. The more people who see it, kind of like what you're hinting at, is when you see it, it's hard not to fall in love with it. We want to keep pushing.
Well, I'm going to be ordering a lot more. I hope I get a lot of rewards somehow. So I'm going to need them. I'm going to need them as I go forward. Well, there's a lot of stuff out there I want.
We can hook you up. You've got the inside track. That'd be great.
Well, I tell you, Mike, the Magnetic Press is something that, if you have not looked at it, please take a look at it. Again, it's magnetic-press.com. And if you're like me, you're going to go away going, oh my gosh, I've got to put money into this. He wants all my money. That's what they always say. So just keep it up. And I'm just going to be fascinated to see what other stories you tell as things move forward, because you're already telling a lot of tremendous stories. So the more you do in the future, I can't wait to see what's going to be.
Well, the thing is, we first tried Kickstarter again in June, you know, primarily because of the pandemic. And it turned out to be such a good strategy for us that, spoiler alert, we've got we have three other campaigns planned for the rest of the year. So there are other, and each of the books are equally fantastic in different ways. So we want to make sure that every campaign, it's not just they're just using Kickstarter to sell another book. It's like each book is really unique and very special. So I think it's going to be a good year, I hope.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's great to welcome back to the podcast Caleb Toussaint, creator of so many good stories that I read. I just got done reading, by the way, The Nook, which I was fascinated by, one of your great stories, and Alter Life, which was the first one of yours, and then Super Cats, which is you just create such a great variety of stuff. And you've got a Kickstarter going on right now that we should probably get right to and talk about, called Flytrap. Yeah. How you doing, Caleb?
I'm doing good, Wayne. Thanks for having me.
So talk about Flytrap. What is Flytrap about?
So Flytrap is a crazy time travel story that I thought up. It's about a guy who, when he's a kid, is inspired by the movie The Fly to create this portal device. And then he hides it away because he's afraid of it. And then it comes back again, back into his life later. But it's all about this weird device that he creates based off The Fly, somehow destroying the world in the future, and he himself has to go back and stop the inspiration for the creation of this device, and thus saving the world from the disaster that is time travel.
Interesting. Now, the important thing to know is that this project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Sunday, February the 28th at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Important to know. Now, as we're talking early in the campaign, and you, as this point, the goal is $7,500, and you're, even when we're talking, which is a little ahead of time, you're about halfway there. So that's a good place to be at this stage.
Yeah, we're just over a weekend at this point, and we're a little over 40% funded, so I'm pretty happy. My goal was to get that 30% in the first week, and we surpassed that, and we're well on our way. Hopefully, we'll get there sooner rather than later, but we know how these things go at this point, so it'll be an interesting couple of weeks, to say the least. And I'm excited because this is another book that I'm really proud of, and it's going to be a beautiful 60-page one-shot, and I'm excited for people to enjoy it.
So if you've got a copy of the remake of The Fly, you better watch it now.
Well, you can if you can, you can bear it. I know a lot of people hate that movie, but I think personally that it's not so much about the movie itself, but the message that it sends to this young aspiring genius of tech genius, because he watches this movie and he sees this amazing invention that this guy's creating, and then this one small minuscule thing destroys it all, and he thinks, oh, I'm gonna do that, I'm gonna change the world, but I'm not gonna make that mistake. And so he's kind of inspired by the movie, and he's also using it as a lesson to remind himself to never make that mistake.
See, that kind of puzzles me, though. I mean, why would he want to go back in time to stop that from happening?
Ah, that's the trick, right? Because he's essentially sees what happens in his future. I'm not going to disclose exactly how that happens, but and that gets him to think, well, somehow I need to stop this inspiration for this device because it is going to destroy everything around me. And it's not just it's weird because he has a conflict of selves in this story. So he has the early self that's a kid and an adolescent going through all this, kind of learning from the movie and experiencing, you know, creating inventions because of it. And then his middle-aged self who is actually going back to this device because of circumstances in his life that he wants to be able to jump from one point to another as in a portal, not knowing that by creating this device, he's also going to be creating time travel. And that time travel is what ultimately causes a catastrophe. So he has to kind of decide where to draw the line. Is it the movie that he needs to destroy? Is it himself that he needs to destroy? Or can he alter the timeline somehow to make things work a different way?
Because, you know, I the thing I always watched about, like, Twilight Zone and things like that was always the person was created this amazing device, but he never had any way to test it, so he ended up testing it on himself. And bad things always happened when they did that. So now I've gotten to the place when I see that sort of thing, I kind of go, oh, I cover my eyes and go, oh, no. Here we go. Something really terrible is going to happen.
Yeah, that's the fun thing. This character knows that, right? Because he sees that in The Fly. So he's like, one of the reasons he scraps this whole idea early on is that he's like, how are we going to test this? It's not, nothing good is going to come from testing this. So I have to put this away and make sure it's not a thing. But there's a moment later in his life that he lets his guard down, and that's where all the catastrophe comes.
I'm going to read the book to find out what that is for sure. That's the way it's going. Now, of course, I have already backed this, and I'm one of the people that has helped you get to this point, which I'm really happy to say. And as we always talk about the you get that thing when you refresh the screen and it doesn't change. And you get that the momentary heart attack. no one's going to ever back this again. Oh no.
Oh God. Yeah.
That's not going to happen, I'm sure, with your stuff, because you've had several good, very successful Kickstarters. So I'm convinced Flytrap will be the same. So I'm not worried at all.
But no, it's good, but you always have those moments, right? Like,
of course.
You always have self-doubt as a creator. And then you watch this and you're constantly watching it. So you think, oh, this should be going up faster. Why are we only here? Yeah. But I try to keep perspective because I've done this so many times now. And I'm like, you know, if I'm 40% in with 19 days still, like, I have to keep the perspective and just ride it out until we get that. You know, the first week and the last week, I'm sure you're aware, mm-hmm. are the bread and butter of these things. So, and I decided to keep it longer. I've been doing shorter ones, but I decided to keep it longer just so we could do more podcasts and streams with Marcelo. The artist is going to do some more streams of him actually working on pages. So it's going to be fun. We're trying to do some little different things to help promote throughout and get more people on board. But we already got 130 people, so it's a nice solid base for reading, and we'll hopefully break my record. I think I've got just under 250 or something is the highest I've gotten. So I think we might be able to do it this time. We'll see what happens.
Well, the important thing for us is not to get complacent. Yes, you're in a good place right now when you're listening to this, but that doesn't mean you should sit back and wait. Now is the time to go out and support this good thing, because we don't want to have Caleb have those heart attacks. We want him to get to the place where stretch goals are happening, and maybe he can do Flytrap 2 or something.
Yeah, so I'll even give you a little insight on that. So I actually wrote this fully intentionally for being just a one story. So it's a 60 page full color. It's going to be even a square bound trade paperback print. It's going to be a nice book. But you can read this story and it's the story. Like, I think I try to sell it this way. You can watch Back to the Future 1. You don't have to watch Back to the Future 2 or 3, right? Like, that's the story. It's a great story. But I already have a plan for some great stories with these characters outside of this book. So it's definitely set up to be a trilogy in a long run, but this story by itself is a self-contained story of Albert dealing with the crisis of time travel. I like to play with perspective, as you probably are aware, reading my stuff. And this is really the perspective of the middle-aged Albert, kind of looking back on his past and learning from his future, as strange as that is. But my other ideas for this series, the second one especially, is going to be the perspective of the older Albert from the future. And you kind of get to see, you know, a man dealing with time travel destroying the world and having to try to figure out how to fix it. So it'll be a fun way to dive back into the same story the way Back to the Future 2 does. I love that type of time travel story, and the complexity, like, it's simple but complex all at the same time. And I wanted to write something that was not the alternate timeline time travel, but it was like a singular line that could be changed by events. And it's all based around the way that I wrote the device itself, too. So it kind of all makes sense in the weird way that I wrote it. So
Okay, well, we've got to read the book. Yeah. That's all we find. All these things make sense once we read the book. I've got a couple of questions, though, about the book. I'm kind of interested that Albert is a person of color.
Yeah.
I'm curious about that, because, you know, many science fiction stories, it's always a white guy. I'm glad you're doing it. I'm just sort of interested. Most people just say, well, it just worked with the story. But was there something about having Albert being a person of color that kind of helped the story? Why'd you pick that?
Honestly, that was not my intention going into this. And when I asked Marcello to give me concepts of the characters, one of the concepts he gave me was a black Albert. And I thought, that makes sense. Like, it's like, why not? Why can't he be black? He doesn't have to be white. He doesn't have to be anything. But it's not really about that. I wanted to make him a believable character, and it doesn't really matter what color he is. But I think it gives him it gives me a new perspective to write from. And I was kind of thrown into that by the artist because I didn't even think of it. I thought I was just going to write another middle-aged white guy making bad inventions. And maybe Marcello was like, I've seen that story.
So. Not again. That's so great.
I embraced it. So, yeah. Because I loved writing in Nook from the little girl's perspective in World War II. So I was like, oh, why not? Let's go with it. And it didn't really change the way that I wrote the character overall. He's still a really smart tech genius that, you know, he got smart young, and I didn't really see any way of changing it that it was going to, or writing it that was going to make it unbelievable for him to be any color. So I thought, sure, let's embrace it and go with it. But it
makes it stand out. That's the wonderful thing about it was when I looked at the pages and I looked at the stuff, I kind of went, that's different. I like that because that's something, you know, I always liked when in DC Comics, when they made Mr. Terrific a person of color.
Oh yeah.
I always liked that because as much as I really liked the original Mr. Terrific, but the way that he was set up was a very unique circumstance. And I thought that was something really interesting to read because I didn't know what he was going to do. And I think your character the same. It's maybe it's because I'm an old white guy. Is when I look at that, I'm not exactly sure what he's going to do, and that makes it much more interesting to me.
Well, it's going to be good. All I can say is I'm excited because it was a perspective I wasn't planning on, and I love when an artist can bring me something that not only challenges me, but makes the book that much better and that more appealing. I think there's something to be said about that, and it's the collaborativeness. I had written a couple minorities in the book itself, but I didn't even think, I was just writing from my own perspective, just like I wrote Alter Life. I was like, but really I was writing, if you think about it, I could have just been writing the same character. So he gave me a new voice by giving me a different concept. So it's pretty cool.
That is great. I mean, like I said, when I saw it, I literally went, I was surprised, and I literally thought, I don't know what's going to happen, and I like that. You know, I like it when I don't know what's going to happen. So for me, that really piqued my interest when I saw that. So I thought that was really cool. Now, you have brought up another question I wanted to ask. How did you come across the artist? I mean, talk about Milo and, you know, how this came – Marcello, I'm sorry, and bring it – how this happened, yeah. How did you guys start to work and do those kinds of good things?
So Marcello, oddly enough, he lives in Chicago where I used to live. Never met him while I was in Chicago. I think I hired him to do an Ultra Life variant cover at one point. And then I got to see some of his, he does like, I can't think of the name of it, but he does very superhero-y art for his own comic. And then I was like, you know, I kind of like that. I wonder if we can do something with him for some other pinups or something. And then randomly, I forget how it exactly happened, but with Nook, I asked him if he would be willing to take a step in a different direction, because he had always done superhero art for comics. And I kind of threw this idea at him, and he was like, this is going to be a challenge for me, and I kind of want to embrace it. So we like went forward with Nook, and we were just doing it. We actually kind of just weren't even planning a full book at first. I had it written out, and we started doing page by page. I mean, probably over half a year, we were just going page by page, like every other week or something. And then eventually we built up enough of it that I was like, oh, let's launch the first part of it on Kickstarter and see if people like the idea. And it funded in like 7 hours or something ridiculous. Like it was insane, because we already had most of the book done, so we didn't need a lot. But also it's World War II, and it's a ghost story, and it's something, there's something fantastical about it, and people just flocked to it. So we just kept going with it. And then after he did that with me, we did a short that was a sci-fi short for some competition probably a year and a half ago. And I really liked the sci-fi stuff that he came up with. So I actually originally pitched this Flytrap script as a Top Cow Productions, one of their talent search things that they do every year. And ended up getting rejected. So I was like, oh, I really like the concept, so I'm going to make new characters and make it something that's unique. And then I just took it back to Marcello, because I loved the little sci-fi short he did with me. It was like a little 4-page thing. And he's just been knocking it out of the park with this one. And it just looks amazing. I think it's the most professional looking one I've done so far. And I don't know, he's taking it to another level with this book. And I got Robert Nugent doing the colors, and he's pretty well known for doing a lot of indie books these days. And he's just does a fantastic job too. So I feel like we have a really solid team, and Marcello has been a really big part of making this book what it is.
That's so interesting. I love it when an artist adds a perspective that you might not think of originally, because sometimes they'll just draw a panel, and the way they draw the panel, it sparks something in the writer, and they go, wait a minute, I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
And so I'm always fascinated with the creative process. Yeah,
that's one of the reasons I keep going back to Marcello now. Even something else that I'm working on, I pitched to him, because with Nook, he took some of my pages and just did things with them I had not even thought of. I was just doing basic paneling, and then he's like, let's do it this way. And it just made the book something I would have never imagined. And it came out so well.
Well, see, the good thing, though, is that you're open to that. There are certain writers who would not be open to that, shall we? Why don't we just say it that way?
I understand that, though. I came from coming from film background. Like, yeah, there's egos, especially with writers and directors and all that stuff. But for me, I feel like having someone that works with the visual medium so much more than I do, I feel like I should allow him more leniency. So I always tell him, I'm like, if you see something better here, if you want to add a page in here because it's going to add something to it, you tell me. And I actually already done that for Flytrap a couple of times. But I like to keep my mind open to another perspective, because even though I can write the words, I don't always see the page the best way that an artist might see it a better way. So
it reminds me a little bit of Star Trek, because, you know, when Next Generation, when they were filming it, that script came down and it was gospel. I mean, you couldn't even say the words differently. If you said the words slightly differently, they had to refilm it, because that wasn't what the script said. And I often felt that it came across kind of tight. It was the only way I could feel it.
Yeah.
It didn't feel natural when they spoke. It felt sort of unreal. And so when you do those kinds of things, I think being open, I mean, I'm sure there's times he suggested things. I don't think we should do that.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, when he comes up with a little different perspective, can add something to the story. And, you know, when I hear a writer say that they're open to that, I just applaud that. Because there are, I could name names and I won't, but there are people who I think miss a lot because they just don't, they don't have that. Well, wait a second, let me at least consider something.
You know, it honestly probably comes from me not coming from the comic book background that I'm as open, because maybe this a lack of confidence. Maybe I'm just like, I just don't see this the right way. Maybe Marcello has the vision a little more for that, what that page is going to look like. Because, man, some of these panel setups that he does, especially in Nook, when he would throw them to me, I'd just be like, I did not see it like that. I saw it from a different angle, or I saw, you know, just the basic 8-panel setup or something. But he's like taking it and turning it into like a full page of an illustration that's, there's one in particular of this girl walking down the stairs and there's a monster under the stairs. When I wrote that, it was not that. it was like feet walking downstairs and maybe like footprints or something, but he just took it and was like, this is an art piece in and of itself. And I'm like, if I told him not to do that, the book would be not as good of a book. So I try to encourage, I mean, most of these artists that you work with aren't just comic book artists either. They have artistic chops to be able to come up with great things that you might not ever think of to put on that page. So I think it's important to keep your mind open.
Well, that you are aware of that, I think, makes you a better writer. I think that you can say, okay, I have the basic story in my head, but if something comes along that would make it even better, you know, hey, I believe me, I have I've interviewed people who say that artist had better get it the way I expected it, or else he's not going to be on the book. And I'm like, really? I mean, you've got this great artist and you won't let them do anything. You won't let them even try something new. Nope.
Wow.
It's got to be what I want. And I'm always like, well, that's your loss.
Yeah. Sorry,
but that's the way it goes.
I just can't think like that for some reason. No.
Well, good. That's a good thing. I don't think it makes you any less of a writer. I think it makes you a better writer that you can say there might be other options that had I considered them, I could have done. But because it's been presented to me, I can see how that makes it a little better.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
I think it's kind of live and learn too, because Alter Life, for instance, Katrina is a great artist, but she went by the book. She like followed my paneling and everything the way that I set it up probably 90% of the time. It's a great book and I'm proud of it, but it does not have the same pop as Marcello's artwork, because I let him have more free rein with it. And I said, you know, don't be boxed in by this idea that I have. Make it something special.
But maybe where you were as a writer at that point, that was good.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I was, you know, still kind of figuring it all out, you know. Mm-hmm. So,
and you got to see it on the page the way that closer to what you expected. And so that was a good experience for you to see that. And then, you know, as time goes on, you start writing other things, you start to say, well, wait a second, they did that. What if I had done that back there? You know, all those kinds of wonderful things can happen. But it was probably a good experience for you the first time to see it come together kind of mostly the way you expected it. So that it wasn't a bad idea, I think, just a good way to start.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because I think back to writing that, and then when I would get pages and I would be so excited to see that it came back like, wow, she's like in my head. It's exactly the way I imagined it. Like I had Marcello giving me things that I never even put on the paper, I might have been like, what the heck is going on here at that point? Mm-hmm. So, it's a learning, a growing process. having been doing this for, it's been over 5 years now. So
wow. Well, that's good. So, but you have grown as a writer to be able to understand that there might be options that you haven't thought of at that time. And that's a great place to be, to where somebody, you can let an artist go and do this stuff. You know, I know some writers who, when they get stuff, if it's too close to what they want, they're disappointed. You know, I can think of a couple of writers who have told me, you know, I had this artist and he gave me exactly what I wanted, but I wanted more than what I wanted. I wanted it to be bigger and better, and I couldn't imagine how to do that. And I hoped that the artist could do that for me.
Yeah, it's good to find an artist that you click with. Maybe that's why I keep just going back to Marcelo now, because I feel like we have that back and forth now, that he gets a little bit of freedom, but he loves the story, so he's not going to like change a bunch of things. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the other characters in the book? And of course, right away, when you look on the Kickstarter page, you see, you know, he's got a friend, shall we say, who lives next door to him. And all those, and there, then we get to see another character that is there with Albert as time progresses, a guy with glasses and stuff like that. I mean, did those characters follow more closely with what you originally intended, or did he also give you a little bit more of that?
I think, you know what, he gave me a little more perspective on that. He kind of does his own thing, and I applaud him for doing it. The girl was very much, was pretty close to what I imagined, but he still took some liberties I might not have gone with myself. And then, really, the older gentleman with the glasses is Albert. But he definitely took him a funky direction, not exactly the way, again, that I had imagined. But if my imagination would have done it, it'd have been the stale white old man that's in every Twilight Zone movie or show. So it's like, he took it and made it more appealing. So he's a great artist for doing that. And I mean, the funniest thing about this book is the main three characters of the book are the same character. But you also have his girlfriend that's very important, because she's the inspiration of bringing that portal device back. And you have his sidekick, I would say, his lab partner there, who is kind of the simple scientist guy that, you know, is going to reveal this and that and the other thing that happens that Albert's not aware of. So you get the biggest trick for me was writing the same character three different ways and three different perspectives. So you have the young scientist that's ambitious and doesn't really grasp how bad things can get with his inventions. Then you got the middle-aged scientist who's kind of already fed up with the way the military treats his inventions and is kind of getting sick of being separate from his girlfriend. So that's where this portal device comes into place. So he's kind of like he's a little bit of an eccentric curmudgeon of a scientist. And then you have the old grizzled future Albert who's seen hell, and we don't know exactly what that hell is yet. But it's all the same character, so you get to kind of play with him still essentially having the same personality, but he's either really innocent or jaded from the things that he's seen.
That's difficult, isn't it? I mean, how do you approach the same person in different places? Because a lot of writers will keep the same person in this, it'll be in different places, but it'll be exactly the same guy. So to
make him a little jaded, so that, you know, I try to think of it from my own perspective and see how I see how saw the world when I was a kid. And then, you know, you add the element of him being super smart to it so that he's very aware of the world around him. But then, you know, I get a little more jaded as you get older, I would say, is probably a fair assumption for most people. So I took that into account with the middle-aged Albert, and then you kind of just try to put myself in the shoes of these people as best I can. And I could only think, you know, if you went through years of trying to fix a mistake that you made, where would your perspective be? And that's kind of where this old man Albert comes from.
Interesting. You know, something I did want to go back and we were talking about you and Marcello and how you guys work together. I bet you if you asked him, he feels the same way about you that you do about him, that you are giving ideas to him and you expand his ability to tell stories.
Yeah, he's actually kind of said that to me before.
See, I knew that. I knew it. Because that's how good teams work together. You grow with each other.
I mean, Nook was so out of his wheelhouse that he took it on, and then he was like, oh man, you made me a better artist with that book. And that's like, cool. I feel the same way. So
see, that's cool. That's when you guys work well together, is when you stretch each other and you challenge each other. And I could see that really. I kept sitting here thinking, I bet he feels the same way. I just bet it. So that's cool. That's a great way to do that. So this is a trilogy, you're saying, that this is only the first part. Well,
that's the hope, right? My idea was, I'll write this really, really good one story. And, you know, if it hits the mark and people want more, I have plans. If it doesn't, and we get one made and it does okay, but nobody really is clamoring for more, I've come to a point now where I can kind of walk away from a project if it doesn't work. But as of right now, it's looking like people are pretty excited about it. So
you know, it's doing well on Kickstarter. That's always a good sign. That's always a great place to be. You know, if you were out there with $10 on your Kickstarter right now, I'd say, well, maybe not. But I think that you know, where you are is a good place to be. And I figure by February 28th, I bet you anything that you're going to be in stretch goals.
I hope so.
Which will be great stuff. I'd like to see that, because it's all kind of good things. So this is obviously keeping you busy right now, Flytrap is. What about other things? Are there other projects that you can talk a little bit about, or are there things that that you can't talk about? And
there's a little bit of both.
Okay. Good. That's a good sign.
There's excitement about my kid series. I can't really reveal too much about yet, but it's Super Cats. There will be much more coming soon from that series, which I'm excited about. And my son is excited about. told him more Super Cats is coming. He's like, where's the books? I'm like, not right now, but... so that's exciting. But also have another kid series I'm working on that's called Coin Op Kid, which is kind of a fun video game superhero kids series that I think will be a pretty fun thing to make. A little different for me. I don't tend to go the superhero route except for the kids things, but something about this one, it's like got a Scott Pilgrim feel to it too. So I'm excited about it. And I got I already have an artist kind of working on some conceptual stuff for that. And then the other big thing is taking another stab at books with Marcello. Been writing a modern take on Peter Pan, and it's going to be like a 6-issue series or big book if it goes really well. We'll see. But it's kind of modern Peter Pan during a pandemic. It's kind of stemmed from this past year, plus I really have been oversaturated with Peter Pan stories from my kid being obsessed with everything Peter Pan. So I started coming up with these crazy ideas, and it's really good. I really feel like it's going to be an important book because it's about a kid kind of being forced to grow up too early during all of the stuff going on in the world. So I'm really excited about that one. I think Marcelo, after working on it with Nook, it's kind of got the, it's got a little bit of that feel to it where it's dark fantasy kind of, I keep telling people it's like if you made a sequel to the Hook movie that Steven Spielberg did, but just a little bit darker than that. So it's,
you know, I'm glad to hear you talking about the pandemic and influencing a story, because that's one thing I thought I'd see a lot more by now, is that people telling stories in the pandemic situation, because I think there's a lot of story.
And I don't want it to be, I don't want it to be like in your face, like it's about that people having been stuck in their house and all that stuff. It's really about a kid, you know, witnessing all this stuff going on, and one of their parents gets sick and like has to go through COVID. And then it's like they're being forced to see things that kids don't really have to see normally. And it kind of forces him to, you know, have to grow up, but he doesn't want to. So that's where the Neverland stuff comes in. And it's cool. It's going to be really cool. I'm really excited about that one.
Sounds great. All your stories are really fascinating to me, because I you always go places that I can't imagine, which always intrigues me. I always want to go someplace that I haven't thought about, and your books always do that to me. Like with the, I think Flytrap is one of those great ones that's going to be really good. I bet you this will be a movie someday. I just bet you. I just feel it. It would be fun to see this on the screen.
Sometimes I wonder where my ideas come from, Wayne. I don't know. I don't know. Sometimes I wake up and I have this idea and I'm like, what is wrong with me?
Oh, no. Don't question it. Just encourage it, because that's where the good stuff comes
from. Because I have some more really dark ones that are in the works too. So it's I have a nice mix. You can watch. Yeah. You can go read some superhero cats, or you can go read some World War II death if you want to, but I think, I don't know, I don't want to do the same thing all the time, and I've always been like that, where I'm constantly looking for something different to do with myself. So this is a great way to harness that ability into different perspectives. So
That's good, because you know, the good writers don't only write westerns. You know, they don't only write science fiction. They can write different kinds of storytelling. And I see yours. I mean, when I ran into Ultralife, I thought, this is so different. It's so interesting and unique. And, you know, even Supercats, I think, is something different and kind of fun. And so that you could do these different things is a great testament to how you're able to write.
I've always tried to do something that is new, but also feels like almost like you've seen it before. Or like, Supercats is something where it's like, isn't that a thing already? It's like people kind of have done cats, like animal superheroes, but this is a little different. Mm-hmm. There's always a different spin on it that makes it something that's just a little out of the ordinary. And that's that's always what I try to do with it.
Well, that's good, because I've read The Ordinary. And it ain't fun. I can tell you that. I have read books. When I get to the end, I go, yeah. Okay, that was 5 minutes. I wish I could get back. You know, kind of stuff. Your books are never that way. I'm always going, now what? What is he going to do next? Where are we going? Because, and I also get moved into the story. I'm never, you know, I'm reading the story and I'm going into it, and I'm going like, okay, this is interesting. This is really, now what's going to happen? Because, you know, it's like actually living in there and watching these people do the stuff they do. It's great stuff.
One of the greatest compliments that I've gotten, not to downplay your compliment for Ultralife, because you've always complimented me great for that book, and I've always been humbled by how much you enjoy that, and so many people like that book. But someone at one of the last conventions I did before all the mess happened, he's actually works, I think he co-runs a comic shop in the area. I forget When I first met him, I didn't really know that he did all that. He just told me, "Yeah, I got your Nook book the last time I saw you, and it's like the only indie book that I have up on my shelf with all my other books that aren't independent books." And I was like, "No, that feels that feels pretty good.
Wow!
Like I must have done something right in that book to make him put it on." He put it on the higher shelf, you know. I was like, there must be something there.
So cool.
It's a nice compliment to hear that I feel that there's something different about my writing, and because that's what I'm trying to do. I don't want it to be the same as everything else. And as much as I love Back to the Future and Terminator and all those crazy, like nostalgic sci-fi movies and stories, I took those and I was like, with Flytrap, I'm like, I'm going to do something like that, but it's going to be weird. It's going to be like Frankenstein meets Back to the Future with some Terminator in it. Like it's got to be, there's going to be a weird extra element thrown in there.
Mm-hmm. Good. I bet that the Nook's not the last one he's going to do that with. I bet he's going to put other of your books up that like that too. Because
yeah, I hope so.
You're growing as a writer, and you're telling better and better stories as it goes along. And I again, it's Flytrap. It's called A Time Travel Comic Adventure. You want to get to Kickstarter, and again, it's going to need to be met. The goal is going to have to be reached by Sunday, February the 28th at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Do not wait until then. Now is the time to go and get in there and support it, because we want to see stretch goals. We want to see all kinds of good things. Luckily, I was in there with the button that you gave me.
Yeah, I think we still have first time. When we're talking about this now, we still have a few left. I don't know if they'll still be there when this airs, but okay. I think there's probably a dozen or so left. But just so people know, it's 60 pages, full color. It's going to be square bound, trade paperback style. It's a really nice book. I always try to have exceptional quality. And then it's only $15, and that's including shipping in that $15 for the physical copy. And then just $5 for digital. But there's all kinds of cool stuff. I got Joe St. Pierre did a variant cover for it, which is pretty cool. And Nicholas Touris, who's done some pretty cool indie books before, he did this little cartoony Back to the Future meets Rick and Morty kind of variant cover we're doing for it too. But everything, we try to keep the prices as low as we can without, you know, shooting ourselves in the foot. So I tried to make it fair. It's really just $10 for the book and then $5 for the shipping. But I just put it in 15. So you see what you're paying for the book right there on the rewards.
And you can check out the sample pages of the artwork and the story on the Kickstarter page as well. So if you're interested in that kind of push you over into doing it, be sure to take a look at that. And there's lots of good story. I can't wait to see how this goes. I want to see the whole trilogy, to be honest with you. That's what I want to see. Because I know the kind of stories you tell are always going to leave me going, "Oh, wow, I didn't see that coming." And I love that. So, Caleb, just keep it up and much success. I just know this is going to be a successful Kickstarter and maybe even some great stretch goals. And maybe Flytrap 2 will come out of this one. Who knows?
Hope so.
That'd be good to do. Well, keep it up. And, you know, I just can't wait to see the next thing you're going to do. It's always going to be great fun.
All right. Thanks.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.